He had to see about some bad checks he had been stuck with in the course of his business, which was selling kitchen appliances. And maybe, he told his wife Mary Lou, he would go fishing. Welcome to the Oddity Archive with Evan and David.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. So, David, I know we've kind of been covering mostly aliens and devils and paranormal stuff, but we also want to cover some unexplained or unsolved true crime stories. So a little bit of a pivot on this episode. Do I have that right?
Yeah, lucky for you and all of the true crime listeners out there, today's episode does not involve any paranormal information at all. This is a purely true crime episode today.
Cool. Excited to get into that. But before we go down into story mode, I understand you have a few kind of housekeeping things you want to touch on.
Yeah. Let's get into that. And then we can jump into talking about Mr. Larry Bader.
Larry Bader. All right. Sounds good.
I'm going to kind of pull the curtain back a little bit for the listeners. As we're recording this, we just released episode 2, the Aerial School UFO incident. And we're learning this as we go. And so There were some differences between episode 1, episode 2. There'll probably be more differences between then and when this one comes out. We're recording episode, I think this will be 7.
Yeah, 7.
Right now. And so things are going to change. Things are going to shift around. We played with the idea of maybe adding some sound effects in the background during the more storytelling parts of episodes. So you might hear some of that tonight. For instance, if I snap my fingers, the vuvuzelas will start.
He's at the World Cup.
And then they stop when I snap my fingers again. So that's all up to Evan. We've talked about
Oh, wait, can we do that one more time? Can you give me the snap?
There we go. So Evan will be doing all of the audio editing, as we have discussed in the past. So if you hear sound effects in the background or anything, it is his brilliance at work. I also realized in the course of listening to the first two episodes and the next couple that are going to be released, 3 and 4, that we never really covered in the podcast the release schedule or the structure or anything about the bigger picture with the podcast.
That's a good point. Want to remind people this will be a reoccurring thing that they can actually come back and expect to see.
Yeah, and so we're a little late getting to this info, episode 7, but better late than never. So the plan is, if you haven't figured it out by now, we're going to release episodes every other Monday. So every 2 weeks. That's the fastest we can make it work with our schedules. And even that's going to be a bit quick for us. And so we kind of decided we're going to do a 10 episode season. So 10 will be the season finale, and then we'll probably take a little bit more of an extended break. It might be 3-4 weeks between episode 10 and what would be 11, or season 2 episode 1, however we want to structure that. Mm-hmm. But that's how it's going to work. Every other week, 10 episode seasons with a break in between seasons. And you can follow us, Oddity Archive Podcast, on Instagram for any updates. I'll try my best to keep it updated on there, when episodes are going to drop, when we're taking breaks, what we're going to be covering coming up, things like that.
I feel like we've been pretty good about that, at least so far. Giving little breadcrumbs to what's coming up.
Yeah, I've been trying at least the week before to put some sort of story or post or something about the episodes coming up, when it's releasing, all that information.
Yeah, so I guess when I said we, I meant just you.
Well, I do some of it, but most of our social media is handled by your partner, Jess. Shout out to her. We are two mid-30s men who know nothing about social media. And so everything good that is on that Instagram account was done by Jess. So huge thank you to her for doing all of that.
Yeah, she knows the hashtags and who to add and all that stuff. So yeah, thank you, Jess.
Yeah, I think the first post that she put up there, she was like, well, what hashtags would you like to add in here? And I'm like, I have no idea. What hashtag
great time.
Hashtag good podcast.
Hashtag spooky boys.
Let's start that. Let's do hashtag spooky boys. And then the last piece of information that I wanted to give is actually, I heard from a listener about episode one, the Dyatlov Pass episode.
Oh, sweet. So our first fan mail?
Yeah, our first bit of fan information. I'm always open to learning more about these cases. And if I mess something up, reach out. Tell me what I messed up. Give me more info. I want to learn more about these cases. She reached out and wanted to share that we talked about in that episode, avalanche being a theory, also infrasound being a theory. And she informed me that avalanches can actually cause infrasound.
Okay.
And so kind of that could be a dual theory for the Dyatlov Pass incident.
And I feel like we both were kind of going down the combination road on that one, if I'm not mistaken. I tend to try and combine everything into one ultra theory for some reason. But yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah. So it was great to hear from a listener some added information that I didn't have in that episode.
Yeah, no, that's cool.
So let's get into today's episode.
Yeah, what you got?
This is the case of Larry Bader. Have you ever heard that name before?
I've known a lot of Larrys. None of them were Baders.
Okay, so no, don't know many Baders.
That doesn't sound right. I don't know. Maybe we'll...
And like I said, I just heard about this case like 2 months ago.
Okay,
so it's brand new to me, but I jumped on it. I got as much info as I could about it.
Is that something recent?
No. So this is going to be in the 1950s, and then it's going to go into the 1960s.
Okay.
And like I said, this is a play in three acts. And so act one, we go to Akron, Ohio, 1957. Larry Bader, he is a family man that lives there. He's married. His wife is named Mary Lou. He has three kids, all pretty young. I think the oldest was maybe six. And he has a fourth child on the way. His wife is 4 months pregnant.
Okay.
He's well-liked. He was the life of the party. His friends described him as, quote, red-blooded, beer-drinking, all-around nice guy who could talk your ear off and you'd love to sit and listen. He was a family man, too.
It sounds like they're like, he loves to party, but also he's a great dad.
He was big into archery. He won multiple state-level archery competitions. So he was into it. He was also very good at archery. And then a little bit of history on Larry Bader. He dropped out of high school to join the Navy, and he ended up serving 18 months in the Navy and then left the Navy, went back to high school and got his diploma.
Okay.
He went to the University of Akron for one semester and then dropped out. Some of the folks there, professors or other students that knew him, said he wasn't really focused on school. He was kind of focused on get-rich-quick schemes.
Oh, okay.
And so not too into the whole college thing. So he left that and got a job and so on and so forth, and ended up marrying Mary Lou, having some kids. And then really where this story starts is May 15th, 1957. So this is what I talked about in the cold open.
Mm-hmm.
So on the 15th, he wakes up. He is an appliance salesman. And I guess somebody had paid him for something, and the checks that he was given were bad.
Okay.
And so he had to go to Cleveland to go to the main branch of his bank in order, I guess, to sort out the whole thing with these bad checks. It's not something just his local branch could do. He had to drive on to Cleveland. And that's a 45-minute drive, so we're not talking like a super long distance.
Yeah, gotcha.
He goes to Cleveland to handle all of those bad checks, and he tells Mary Lou, maybe after I'm done with all the stuff with the checks, I'll go fishing for a little bit.
Okay.
And Mary Lou says, we got three kids at home. I'm 4 months pregnant. Do you think maybe after you're done with these checks, you could just come home and help out with the kids?
A fair response.
Absolutely. An absolutely fair response.
What was Larry saying to that?
Larry's response to her is, maybe I will, maybe I won't.
Ooh.
So not the greatest response you would get if you were Mary Lou there.
Yeah.
He then, when he's done dealing with bad checks at the main bank branch, he cashes a check for $400, which in today's money would be about $4,500. It's about times 11 times 12 amount of money from then to now. So he gets the equivalent of $4,500 cash. He goes and pays a few bills. And then he decides, no, I'm not going home to help out with the kids. I'm going fishing.
I'm picturing him getting home really late and Mary Lou's like super mad. He's like, well, I said maybe I would or maybe I wouldn't.
Maybe that was his accent. I'm not sure.
Does that only sound in Akron? I should probably just not.
Yeah, I don't know what an Akron accent is. I actually did visit Akron, Ohio one time just after college. And the only thing I'll say about it is a great place. It was a nice visit. They really, really love LeBron James there.
Oh, because he was on the Cleveland basketball team.
Well, he's from Akron.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
If you go to Akron, Ohio, you will see signs on the side of the road, like street signs that say the home of LeBron James.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I had no idea.
Oh, yeah. Big fans of his out there. So he cashes a check, gets all that money, and then he goes to Eddie's Boathouse. And he says, hey, I want to rent a 14-foot boat with an outboard motor.
Okay.
So that's what he does. And the owner of Eddie's Boathouse, Lawrence Kotler, I'm guessing that's how you say that last name, says, you know, hey, maybe you don't want to rent this boat. There's like a really big storm coming. It's probably not the best time in the world to go out there. It was about 4:30 p.m. And Larry says, oh, I'm just going real quick. I'm not going to be out there too long. I won't be out there after dark. But hey, I appreciate the warning. And so immediately after, Larry tells Lawrence, I'm not going to be out there after dark. He asks Lawrence, hey, if I throw you a few extra bucks, could you put some headlights on the boat for me? And so Lawrence, just being confused, puts the lights on the boat so that Larry could presumably see in the dark, even though he had just told him, I'm not going to be out after dark.
Interesting. So he's pretty committed to go out on this boat, it sounds like.
He is convinced he needs to go out and do some fishing. Lawrence notes that Larry had fishing gear and a suitcase with him, which is unusual to take with you when you go fishing.
Yes, I would say so. I mean, it did just come from the bank, but I imagine you would leave that in the car.
You would think so. So notices, hey, he's got a suitcase with him. That's a little bit odd. And he says that he pays the $15 rental from a large stack of bills. So presumably that $4,500 that he had just cashed out. He's got it all just in a big wad of cash.
Right.
And he's throwing some money at Lawrence for a boat and headlights.
And so that pile of money, I guess we don't know if that was from him clearing up confusion with the bounced check or a withdrawal or anything like that. We just know that he had this money.
Well, we know that he withdrew $400 in cash. So he cleared up the checks and then he was like, oh, by the way, I want to withdraw $400. And the bank, you know, is like, okay.
Okay. So he sorted his issue, but then also just made a withdrawal.
Sorted the issue, made the withdrawal. He's got $4,000 or so cash on his person.
Right.
And then just to note, because I'm finding it fairly consistent that in these episodes, I really like looking up moon phases and sunset times.
Yeah, bring it on.
So he sets out at about 4:30. Sunset that day was 8:41. So he's got about 4 hours before the sun sets. Fast forward to sunset. So sun sets 8:41. He's still out in the boat on Lake Erie, and the Coast Guard spots him cruising around because there's a big storm coming. Sails, drives. What do you do for a boat?
Float.
Floats. The Coast Guard floats on over to him. to check on him. And they're like, hey, there's a big storm coming. It's probably not safe for you to be out here. You probably want to start heading back in. And Larry sort of just waves them off.
He's like, yeah, but I got lights. I'm all good.
but the lights. So Larry just kind of waves them off. He's like, hey, thanks, but no thanks. I'm doing my thing. Like, I'll be fine. And the Coast Guard leaves because they can't force him to come back in.
Okay. That was going to be my question. Is like, can they just be like, no, we're going to tell you to.
Yeah. So he's just like, I'm good. I'm fine. And takes off. Fast forward to the next morning. So big storm comes in, goes over Lake Erie, Cleveland area. And the next morning, the boat is found 5 miles down the shore.
Okay.
It's empty, other than it has an oar, it has an empty gas can, 2 life preservers, and all of the fishing gear is still in the boat.
So the only thing missing is Larry and the suitcase.
Larry and the suitcase are gone.
Okay.
Also, the gas line to the motor was disconnected, and police, the mechanics that looked at it, everybody said that's beyond what would happen in a storm or an emergency situation, like somebody had to have disconnected the gas line.
Is there any logical reason why he would do that?
Not that I can think of.
In my head, I was like, maybe it's to get somewhere quietly, but you could just kill the motor, right? You wouldn't have to pull a gas line.
Yeah. So gas line's disconnected. That's a bit of a mystery. And like you said, Larry and the suitcase are gone.
Yep.
Presumed dead. A little bit later, I'm going to kind of fast forward here. It is later found out that Larry Bader was having some financial problems. He was around $20,000 in debt, which in today's money, $227,000 in debt.
Whew.
So he's almost a quarter mil in debt. In addition to that, he hasn't paid any income tax in 5 years.
Not a great sign. Do we know where his money problems originated, or?
I think they just piled up over the years. I read one place that the not filing income taxes was partially an attempt to keep more money in his pocket so that he could pay the debts off.
Right.
But I would imagine that if he was kind of chronically in debt, that saving up money to pay off debts doesn't really work all that well.
Yeah, he's probably just always playing catch up and can never quite get back to zero.
Yeah. And that trying to get rich quick scheme stuff probably caught up to him.
He rolled the dice on a few shady business opportunities, I would guess.
Yeah, didn't work out.
And maybe
well.
They didn't pay out. Yeah.
Yeah. And then the final thing for Act One is it's found out that one of the bills that he paid after he took all that money out of the bank, because if you remember, he took out $400 cash and paid a few bills.
Mm-hmm.
One of those bills was to increase his life insurance for accidental death to $40,000.
So I know where my head's starting to go.
Where's your head going?
Fake his own death to get some cash and repay his debts, and then, I don't know, change his identity, something like that down the road.
An astute observation, sir.
Yeah. The timing is a little suspect, we'll say.
Yeah. You know, I think we need to discuss, because this is kind of the first fully true crime episode that we've done.
Mm-hmm.
So we know, it's well documented, that you're not involved in the paranormal world at all.
Correct.
Do you listen to, watch, follow any true crime stuff?
What was the one that Fincher did about like serial killers and stuff?
Oh, Mindhunter?
Mindhunter.
That was
Mindhunter,
so
I
good.
Loved. So, yeah, it's on my radar a little bit, but it's kind of just, you know, cultural zeitgeist stuff that kind of pops up that's okay. Popular. But, you know, like the movie Seven, stuff like that. Yeah.
Because I'm just wondering how good your predictive powers are going to be with a case like this.
Hopefully better than asking if cryptids were in Egypt. So we'll try and do a little better than that.
So that's the end of Act One. Now let me take you to Act Two of the play. Larry Bader, boat's gone, disappeared, presumed dead. Now let's fast forward. That was May 15th into May 16th when the boat was found. Now we're going to switch gears completely. I'm going to take you 3 days later, May 19th, 1957.
Okay.
We're going 740 miles away to the Round Table Bar at 19th and Harney in Omaha, Nebraska.
Okay.
Normal day. Betty Augustine is working the bar, and in walks John Fritz Johnson.
John Fritz Johnson?
John Johnson.
Okay. I just want to make sure I was getting that right.
Yeah. John Johnson goes by Fritz.
Okay.
Walks into the bar, sits down, orders a drink, starts talking to Betty behind the bar, you know, telling her he wants to be a bartender himself, would like to get a job. He actually ends up asking her out.
Oh.
Says he's a Navy veteran and has a Navy ID, 30 years old. And he says he was one of 22 orphans from an orphanage in Boston. And this orphanage named every orphan John Johnson.
Okay.
And then would give each orphan a different nickname so they could differentiate themselves.
So that's where he gets Fritz from.
Yeah. And so
that's incredible to name every single one John Johnson. Like, it seems like some very elaborate joke, like an easy way to do paperwork or something.
Well, it's kind of like R.I.P. George Foreman. Do you know about George Foreman's kids?
No.
He has like five or six kids and they're all named George Foreman. I'm not making that up.
Were any of them Fritz, George Fritz Foreman?
None of them were George Fritz Johnson, but he named all of his children the same name.
Yeah, I've never been wild about the junior, third, fourth thing, but, you know, anyway.
Well, he didn't. So back to George Foreman, because this is just fascinating to me. He didn't.
Should we just full pivot to a George Foreman story?
George Foreman episode. Great grills. he didn't name them like George Foreman Jr., George Foreman the Third. He didn't put any suffixes on the names. They're all just George Foreman.
Okay. Well, I guess I think the full name has to be identical to be a junior or the third. So if their middle names were different, then
it's possible.
I think that's not, then you don't do that. But
we're not going to do a full pivot.
I'm going to go down a really deep George Foreman rabbit hole.
I was about to just start Googling things, but we need to get back on track here. So, all right. So Johnson.
This is where we need a.
Yeah. I'm going to snap. After I'm done snapping, put in George Foreman grill sizzling sounds. There we go. Okay.
And we're back.
So John Fritz Johnson walks into the bar. He's flirting with Betty behind the bar. Betty is quoted as saying, "He was fascinating, debonair, well-dressed and not broke. He asked me out." So he's probably
the bar is low.
He probably has a good bit of cash on him at the time.
Okay.
Back to his nickname, Fritz. So it comes out, there's kind of two origin stories that he gives for how he got the name Fritz. The first is from the orphanage, that they were all John Johnson. And I think it was like a cartoon character or a comic book character that they said he looked like named Fritz. And so they gave him the nickname Fritz. The other thing that he tells some folks is from his time in the military. Everybody said that his hair looked like a German style haircut.
Okay.
And gave him the nickname Fritz. That way.
Okay.
So that happens May 19th, and 2 days later, he gets a job at Ross's Steakhouse as a bartender. So very quickly, able to find a job in Omaha, and then begins a long series of just wild behavior.
So before we get to the wild stuff, how do we know that he worked at Ross Steakhouse? Or we'll kind of find out why somebody investigated this stuff.
We will find out why somebody investigated this stuff. Also, you'll see he became kind of a local celebrity.
Okay.
And so people kind of were interested in, you know, how'd you get here? You know, what kind of work do you do?
So knew he was. They're like, oh, yeah, he worked at the Ross Steakhouse. Like, yeah, I know Fritz.
Yeah, yeah. Like okay, people, gotcha. People in Omaha, Nebraska in the late 1950s, they know Fritz Johnson.
Fritz fever is really going hard in Omaha, Nebraska. Okay.
Exactly. He quickly moves from Ross's Steakhouse. He becomes a DJ for a local radio station not long after. And then, and you'll see why people know who he is, he decides he wants to do a polio fundraiser. And to do that, he stays atop a pole for 15 days.
What is, like, what?
That was my
reaction.
So
it's like a big post in the ground he stands on?
This is the detail that I heard, and I was like, I have to look into this. I need to cover this for the podcast, because that is such an outrageous thing. It needs to be covered in more detail.
Yeah.
So this is no context pictures that I sent you.
Yeah.
It looks like a little sort of box that's built on top of a pole. And I think there's actually like a window AC unit on it.
There is, yeah.
So he's not just sitting on top of a pole. That's what I was thinking initially. But he's not like, it's not comfortable.
It looks like there's plenty of space for him to like kind of just chill up there. And then on it, it says Fritz of KBON. I imagine that's the radio station. Underneath it, the tagline, "The pole for polio."
Boom.
Boom. Yeah, good stuff.
So he decides, I'm going to stay on top of this pole for 15 days to raise money for polio. And I, side note, I looked into this because I was like, how in the world would he come up with this idea? This was on sort of towards the end of the fad, but there was a period of time in America where pole sitting was a fad. Like, people would just sit atop poles for lengths of time. Somebody sat atop a pole for like more than a year. You can look this up. There's like whole Wikipedia articles and pictures of people just sitting on top of poles.
Like, what started this trend? Do you know, like, what the original one was?
Somebody just did it for like,
and then it caught
for
on
for like 12 hours or something. And then somebody was like, I can beat that.
Yeah.
And sat up there for 18 hours. And somebody was like, well, that's nothing. I can sit on top of a pole for a week. And then so on and so forth. And then somebody got to like an outrageous amount of time, like 14 months or something. And everybody else was like, yeah, I'm not. Okay. You win.
I'm good. Yeah, you got it.
Now, you may have heard reference to this fad if you've ever heard Flagpole Sitta by Harvey Danger.
I have. Yeah.
That song is.
I couldn't tell you any other song by them, but no, I think yeah, I had that one on my mini disc player back in the back in the day.
But yeah, so quick aside about pole sitting. So John Fritz Johnson, he sits up there for 15 days. And then the other stuff that I have, I don't really have a timeline on. It's just stuff that Fritz did around town because he very quickly became very popular. People loved being around him. He was kind of a magnet of attention. So he does a DJ at the local radio station. Mm-hmm. He then becomes the TV sports director. And that's where he really starts to gain a fan base. People will tune into the news just to see Fritz report on the sports. And so people really like having him around. Random places become very big fans of random news reporters.
Yeah.
And he became a very popular news reporter in Omaha, Nebraska in the 50s.
I mean, I could still tell you like half the news team from Richmond, Virginia back in like the 90s.
Yeah. And beyond that, he just led a very eccentric life. He was quoted as saying, it's not a direct quote, something to the effect of, all my life, I've been told what to do as an orphan in the military. Now I'm going to do what I want to do. And so some examples of that. He wore a leather beret, which maybe we should bring back. I'm not sure.
Yeah, but in Omaha, Nebraska, I would say that's like a party of one.
Yeah. So wore a leather beret. His apartment that he had no furniture in his apartment. It was just filled with pillows.
All right, so he lives in an apartment filled
with pillows. He would throw extravagant champagne parties that everybody wanted to come to. He had a party trick that, Evan, I would like to see you attempt.
Okay.
Where he would eat a whole chicken.
Bones and all, or like where did he stop?
Bones and all. He would eat the whole chicken as a party trick.
How would you ever eat and process?
And people would show up and be like, do it again, do the thing. And he would eat a whole chicken.
I mean, if I heard somebody in my neighborhood was going to do that, I would go.
he was a womanizer.
When your home is a pillow fort, you've got some goals.
Yeah. So he bought a hearse, outfitted the back of the hearse with, guess what?
Pillows.
Pillows. A bar with drinks.
Yeah.
Candles, and made it like a lounge area. And to take things a step further, because Fritz was not happy just being average and having an average hearse with a lounge in the back, he registered it with Omaha as a hunting vehicle.
Oh, he was hunting, all right.
Yeah, he was hunting. So people knew this stuff about him, and they just, you know, that's Fritz. He's wild. He's fun. He's eccentric. You know, we like having him around.
Yeah. It sounds like he was maybe just not creepy about it. You kind of know what you're getting into with Fritz. Like,
yeah.
If you pull up in a hearse and there's a bar and pillows in the back and you get in the car with him, you got to at least kind of know what you're getting into.
I would hope that somebody climbing into the back of a hearse bar has an inkling of what the owner's intentions are.
Yeah. And the man is wearing a leather beret.
Lest we forget. Yeah. A dead giveaway.
Yeah.
So some other things, when he wrote checks, he would just sign them Fritz, even though that wasn't a legal name. And he would, instead of writing a date, he would just write a season on it. So he'd just be like, summer, Fritz.
Were people able to cash them?
The bank did. The bank would cash it. And the bank had someone who had the duty of calling him a couple days before each season changed to remind him to start putting the next season on his checks.
I wonder if I could start doing that now, like when I go to
you should try
Kroger. I'm like, hey, here's your autumn check.
with some sort of nickname for you.
What would my one word nickname be that I could sign on checks?
For some reason, I wanted your, this doesn't even begin to make sense, but I want your nickname to be George Foreman.
He looks different. I was going to call back my old email address, Fat Daddy. That's how I want to sign my checks.
There we go. Fat Daddy. Summer.
Like, was he even in here buying macaroni and cheese? Like, okay, well, that's typical Fat Daddy. No.
Fat Daddy's a local celebrity in these parts. Didn't you hear he sat on top of that phone pole for 3 days?
He's up there solving polio again, eating macaroni and cheese. Right, well, I'm getting a character in my head here. I'm seeing the man I can become.
Yeah, I think you could become this guy. To further the confusion with the bank, when he worked as a bartender, he would take his tips in like a quart milk jug. And on the deposit slip, he would just write 1 quart of money and just hand it over to the bank.
Dude, this guy sounds awesome.
And then they had to count it out. Yeah. He notoriously hated two things. The news, even though he worked for the news, and marriage. Mm-hmm. And anytime a friend would come and tell him, hey, I've gotten engaged, we're going to get married, he would famously exclaim, you fool. So you can get an idea of Fritz Johnson in the 50s, right?
Yeah. You paint a very good picture of Fritz. I can't tell if I'm scared of him or want to hang out with him. Or
it's toeing a line there, isn't it?
Yeah. I'm like, I'm afraid if he comes over, he's going to try and like sleep with all my friends or something strange is going to happen if Fritz comes
like
over.
Like if I went to a champagne party and I walk in and it's just pillows everywhere, I don't know if I'm staying or not.
I don't leave immediately.
Yeah. You feel it out a little bit, but like
the moment there's any lower half male nudity, I think I'm going to bounce.
That's the line.
That's the line for me at parties is lower half male nudity.
All right. So hates the news, hates marriage.
Yep.
And then he decides he's going to take up archery to strengthen his back.
I'm having a flashback.
Takes up archery.
Yeah, okay.
According to Fritz, he hasn't been into archery in the past. And 5 weeks after he takes up archery, he wins the Nebraska state title. So, quick learner.
Yeah, sounds like it.
Real quick learner. And then, 4 years later, 1961, he succumbs to his greatest fear and marries Nancy Zimmer.
Ugh. Did he look in a mirror and go, you fool?
I don't know if he called himself a fool, but all of his friends, rightfully so, did give him a lot of grief and a lot of joking with him and stuff.
How do you know? And that was his fiance or to-be wife was Nancy.
Nancy Zimmer. They get married in 1961.
Okay.
Nancy Zimmer, she is a 20-year-old model.
Sounds like his type.
Yeah, sounds like his type. And he adopts her daughter. So she had a daughter from a previous marriage. He adopts the daughter, and they actually end up having a son together.
Okay. And do you know how old he is at this point?
So he'd be 34 and 61.
So a bit of an age gap.
A little bit of an age gap. 3 years later. So he continues. He's married with the children, being his eccentric self.
Yeah.
And in 1964, he goes to the doctor. He's not feeling too well. And they find a cancerous tumor behind his eye.
Ooh.
He has to immediately get surgery for that. They remove the cancerous tumor.
Does he keep the eye?
Unfortunately, he loses the eye.
Although, leather beret and eye patch, I mean, this man doesn't know when to stop. That is a badass look.
That was my exact next note, is that after the eye is removed, he wears an eye patch, and it just adds to the aura that surrounds John Fritz Johnson.
Yeah, he's got a vibe for sure.
And so this ends act two.
Act two ends with a slow pan out from a man in a leather beret, eye patch, married to a 20-year-old model.
Exactly.
Okay. And scene.
End scene.
Thank you.
Rolling here.
All right, here we go. Are we ready for Act 3?
Let's do it.
All right. So begins Act 3 of the play, the final act.
Yes.
So we've just left John Fritz Johnson wearing an eye patch and a leather beret at home with his children and wife. And the next year, 1965, on February 2nd, John Fritz Johnson travels to Chicago to demonstrate archery equipment at a sporting goods show.
Is he a sponsor or selling them or what?
I think he was just involved with a sporting goods store or brand or something. He had won an archery competition like we talked about. And so
sounds like he's like a brand ambassador or something. Kind of
Like that. And he's demonstrating some of the equipment. He travels to Chicago to do that. While he's there, someone, I'm not sure who, from Akron, Ohio, looks across the conference floor, sees John Fritz Johnson, kind of cocks his head to one side, takes a look, puts his head the other way, takes a look, and then he goes and gets Suzanne Pica. She's 21 years old, and he brings her over to see John Fritz Johnson. She goes up to John, or Fritz, and she says, "Pardon me, but aren't you my Uncle Larry Bader who disappeared 7 years ago?"
No.
You're exactly right.
You fool. Fritz,
you fool. Fritz laughs it off. "No, I'm not your uncle that disappeared 7 years ago. My name is Fritz.
The fact I look exactly like him and I'm great at archery is just a coincidence.
I live in Omaha, Nebraska. I don't know who you're talking about." He was friendly about it. He wasn't like mad or angry at her, but he just laughs it off.
Yeah.
Suzanne is not convinced. So she calls her uncles, John and Dick, who happen to be Larry Bader's brothers. She says, "Hey, there's this guy at this conference. There's just a striking resemblance to Larry. Can y'all come on out here and I just need y'all to meet this guy."
And so I assume it's fair to say there was nobody ever found from when he vanished and the boat and suitcase were gone.
Larry Bader's body was never found. I think after 2 or 3 years, he was officially ruled dead just because they hadn't found him.
Okay.
So John and Dick, they fly to Chicago immediately at their niece Suzanne's suggestion. They go to the sporting goods show and they meet Fritz and they talk to him and they're like, "You are our brother." And he continues to deny it. "I am not your brother. I am Fritz. I'm from Omaha. I have a family. I'm not your brother."
So how many years would it have been since they'd seen him?
7 years.
7 years. Sorry, you just said that.
Yeah.
I mean, can you imagine seeing, you have sisters, like seeing them in 7 years and being like, "Are you for real?"
Like, where have you been?
It's crazy to think you would just be like, "No, that's not me. Don't worry about it."
Yeah. And so John and Dick say, "All right, well, we can figure this all out real easily. Why don't you just come on down with us to the police station, get your fingerprints done. We can compare them to Larry's fingerprints from when he was in the Navy."
Okay. Because I was like, how did they have his prints? But that makes sense.
Yeah. And so they say, "Come on down. Let's let the police take your fingerprints, compare those to when you're in the Navy, and we'll see if you're actually not Larry." And what do you think Fritz does?
If I was Fritz and knew I was actually their brother, I would be like, "Yeah, I'll meet you guys down there," and then I would dip.
Okay. That's a good idea if you're trying to hide your identity, right?
Yeah. So what did he do?
So Fritz says, "Yeah, absolutely, I'll do that."
Oh.
Meets them at the police station, gladly gets fingerprinted. No objection whatsoever from Fritz about getting fingerprinted.
Mm-hmm.
And guess what the police find?
If I had to guess, it's a dead match.
Dead match.
Yeah.
So the next day, the Chicago police lieutenant, Emil Geis, G-I-E-S-E. Geis?
Guess. It's a guess.
So the next day, Chicago police lieutenant, Emil Geis, calls Fritz and says, "The prints I took off your fingers and the fingerprints of the missing Larry Bader are identical. Either you are he, or this is something from outer space.
Yeah, it all comes full circle. Yeah,
so
there
here's
you go.
Your one seed of paranormal here. No, so this is, you know, he's saying that in jest. That's not possible. And so what do you think Fritz does at this point?
I mean, he's got to run, right? I still don't know why he even went in the first place, but he runs.
He doesn't. So Fritz, he's quoted as saying, "It was a physical shock. Up until that moment, I had no doubt that I was not Larry Bader. But when I heard that, it was like a door had slammed and somebody hit me right in the face."
So he's claiming like the amnesia defense.
Essentially, he's claiming amnesia, but he fully accepts that he is Larry Bader.
Yeah, yeah.
He doesn't
fight it. It's like once he gets the information back, he's like, "Oh, I was Larry the whole time."
But he doesn't regain any memories. He doesn't.
He just accepts that he was Larry. But
he continues that he is Fritz Johnson, but he is accepting of, "I am actually Larry Bader." And so Mary Lou and his four kids are like, he's suddenly back in their lives.
Can you imagine? Your dad disappears, normalish kind of guy, and then comes back in a leather beret, eye patch, dating a model and two more kids, and you're like,
driving
what
a hearse.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Well, he's got the pillow fort in the back at least, so the kids would be, well, I guess they're like 20 at this point.
So Mary Lou and the kids, he meets them. He, you know, acts like it's the first time he has ever met them before. Mary Lou is actually a little upset.
A little upset. I would freak out.
What? She's actually kind of upset that he's shown back up because she had moved on.
She had
gotten on with her life. She was actually engaged again to be married. She was raising the kids. She was doing well.
I kind of wonder if she, in the back of her head, already kind of assumed he had done something shady, if that's kind of what he was known for.
It's possible.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so Larry / Fritz, they spend time together, Mary Lou and him, and Mary Lou is convinced he has no idea who she is or who the kids are. She says it just doesn't work. And so they were Catholics.
Mm-hmm.
And so Mary Lou, in her religious beliefs, cannot get divorced.
Okay. When he's married again anyway, right? Like, what? It'd be messy.
Yeah, it would be messy. So a team of psychologists and neurologists, they're hired to look at Fritz.
This man's commitment is exceptional. I love it.
Like, what is going on here? So they examine him for 10 days and they determine what you said. It's a severe case of amnesia.
Oh, so they believe him.
Yeah, they believe him. They believe this is a severe case of amnesia. This man has no memories of being Larry Bader.
Hmm.
So they believe him.
Do you know what test they ran by any chance? I know that's probably...
They examined where the tumor was behind his eye. Maybe that had some impact on his brain.
Oh, that's an interesting thought.
I know a little bit about the brain, and I can tell you that almost all memory processing happens in an area of the brain called the hippocampus.
Mm-hmm.
And that's more like internal inside of the brain. And so a tumor right behind your eye is not going to impact the hippocampus.
Okay. So what, is there any part that a tumor there would affect?
So the tumor behind the eye would be impacting your frontal lobe, which is stuff like impulsiveness.
Well, that explains a little bit.
Impulsiveness, mood regulation.
Beret wearing.
Things like that. Yeah. The frontal lobe is the first part of your brain that's impacted when you start drinking. So think about like a couple drinks in, how you start feeling.
Okay. Yeah.
That's your frontal lobe getting kind of dumbed down by the alcohol.
Okay.
But so all that to say, a tumor behind your eyes shouldn't impact memory processing to that degree.
Would it explain his personality type at all? Like where he's this playboy type, he's just kind of living like he's buzzed half the time?
Frontal lobe damage could have a major impact on your personality.
Interesting. Okay.
So there's that piece, but it shouldn't impact memory.
Okay.
So they examine him. They say, yeah, this guy, terrible case of amnesia. He doesn't remember being Larry Bader. There's also a lot of other fallout from this sudden realization that Fritz and Larry Bader are the same person, in that his marriage to Nancy is nullified. So he's no longer married to Nancy because he never got divorced from Mary Lou.
Okay. Can't get married twice. Yeah.
Yeah. Marriage to Mary Lou is back on.
Oh, and she was engaged, right? So he really blew up her spot.
That engagement is not happening anymore.
Now I understand her anger a little more. She's like in the next chapter and then some probably. And then he comes in and they're just married again.
Yeah. Then he shows back up and hey, the marriage is back on.
Yep.
Beyond that, Mary Lou got a $40,000 life insurance payout that now has to be paid back.
I was curious if the money that he was living off of and Mary Lou was saying he was a man of culture and money or whatever. I mm-hmm. assumed that was like somehow he got his life insurance payout. But yeah, I guess it would make more sense that it would go to somebody living.
Yeah, Mary Lou was the benefactor of the life insurance policy. So she got the $40,000. That's got to get paid back now.
Okay.
Also, Mary Lou was getting monthly Social Security checks, like survivor's benefits, right?
Yeah.
So now suddenly all of that money has to be paid back.
And they're married too, so they're both on the hook.
They're both on the hook for it. Once this blows up, people in Omaha hear about it. Larry Bader loses his job. He ends up finding what work he can, and he stays loyal to both wives. He sends a third of his paycheck to Mary Lou. He sends a third of his paycheck to Nancy, and he keeps a third of his paycheck for himself.
I mean, you could do worse.
So he's not making much money. You know, he couldn't throw champagne parties or anything like that anymore.
Had to sell the hearse, sadly.
Probably had to sell the hearse. And so there's a lot of financial, but also just social fallout from this realization that Fritz is Larry Bader.
Did his celebrity status like crater from this, or are people just like, man, he's even more...
He kind of became a disgraced celebrity.
Yeah.
Celebrity's a strong word. He wasn't like... People didn't know about him outside of Omaha, Nebraska, but he was like a local celebrity. And that kind of just went by the wayside when all this news came out.
Right.
And then September 16th, 1966, the tumor is found to have come back. I guess the cancer had spread. And then September 16th, 1966, he passes away. So from the time he is found out to be two people, let's say, to the time he passes away is 18, 19 months.
So just under 2 years from being found out to passing away.
And that, for us, ends Act 3. And so, really, you know, this isn't, like we've talked about, this isn't a paranormal case.
Yeah.
This isn't a bunch of theories that I throw at you and then see what sticks. The question is, was he lying? What did he actually have amnesia? What was going on?
Just to play devil's advocate, I was trying to give him the benefit of the doubt. I mean, it sounds suspect from start to finish. I was wondering mostly about if that part of his brain would affect him not remembering stuff. And then once you said it's not what it would affect, you know, he gets back into archery. Like there's just too much that he pulls from the previous life to make me think he had amnesia. It's also just crazy to me he just went to the police station and let them take his fingerprints, because at that point you're like, I mean, I know what they're gonna find, but he just like willingly went.
That's what I get hung up on too, is if he was as Fritz, if he was fully conscious, if this was like a whole plan that he had come up with, like, I'm gonna go out on the boat, I'm gonna act like it's crashed, I'll disconnect the gas line for whatever reason, I'll take off to Omaha and start a new life. And all he would have had to do is the minute that girl comes up to him in Chicago mm-hmm. and says, hey, aren't you my uncle? He just leaves.
Yeah.
Right? Just, oh, no, I'm not. And then he's like, oh, maybe I'm getting found out. I got to leave early for something, go back to Omaha. So he had a chance then.
So this is where maybe his brain being affected, where he is a little loose. And like, I mean, he sounds very overly confident. So maybe he's just cocky to a fault where he's like, I'm going to get away with it. If I've already gotten away with all this other stuff, like, you know.
Yeah. So that's a point that he could have gotten away with this. Then when his brothers show up and they're like, hey, let's go get fingerprinted. He could have done what you said. Yeah, sure, I'll meet you there tomorrow.
Yeah.
Just goes home. Would have gotten away with it. If he had just said, no, I'm not interested, he would have gotten away with it. He had multiple opportunities to very, very easily not be given up as Larry Bader. And that's where I get hung up on this case, because there's no doubt in my mind that Larry Bader from Act One of the play,
yeah,
had a plan to disappear, because he goes with a suitcase. He shows up in Omaha, like has an ID. 3 days later, you're 750 miles away. You have a fake ID. Like something was planned. You can't. Yeah. Maybe things were different in the 50s. But like if I just like showed up at the Social Security office or DMV and I was like, hey, can you give me an ID that says I'm George Foreman? They're going to be like, no.
Well, these are, I feel like I've heard a few stories like this from like the 50s and 60s. I'm like, did you used to just get away with everything? It sounds like you could just do anything and no one could ever catch you. But yeah, it's like, even if he was starting to get found out by his family, I'm curious what the dynamic was like when the brothers came into town, if they were like, no, we're going to the police station.
Like getting forceful about it?
Yeah. In my head, it's like they show up like, hey, we think you're our brother that's been missing, but they're probably like super pissed. So maybe they're like, get in the car. We're going and getting fingerprinted. We're going to get to the bottom of this. Because I mean, 7 years, they're pretty sure. I mean, I would know if I saw my sister. I would know if I saw my brother.
Yeah, yeah. But even then, he could have just said, no, I'm not doing that. But he went happily. And once they take your fingerprints, like the game's over.
Yeah. Unless, maybe he missed his family too, and this was like an opportunity to kind of come back and see everybody. I mean, it just blew up his world so bigly. You know, that's a very cool story. That's a good true crime one to open on. The whole time I kept waiting for like a bank robbery or something like that. And this was like way more interesting than kind of anywhere my initial thinking was on where this would go.
Once you get into the Fritz stuff and just how he was, it really makes the story.
Yeah. And I love that you went down this rabbit hole just based on curiosity about the polio fundraiser.
Yeah, like you're going to sit on top of a pole for 15 days?
Kind of a platform on a pole, but yeah, something like that. Yeah, yeah.
Maybe we should do a fundraiser where we sit atop a pole together.
Yeah, what are we gonna cure?
Cure. Maybe.
Athlete's foot.
Athlete's foot. Poles for athlete's foot.
And we just sit up there and we play flag pole sitter.
What's our goal? How long? What is our goal for staying up there?
I mean, you said the record is 14 months. I think we go for 2 years.
We're going for the record?
Yeah.
I was thinking like 5 repeats of flagpole sitter and then come back down.
Well, you can go down and I'll stand up there and I'll get the record.
Okay. You're going to listen to flagpole sitter for 14 months.
I might throw in a few other songs here and there, but yeah.
Only Harvey Danger songs though.
Well, so that song, there's no references to polio cures in that song that I remember.
I don't think there's references in the song to it, but the title is a reference to the fad.
All right. Anyway, is there any other Fritz info you think is beneficial for us on this one?
No, I think that's about it. It's just an interesting case to me that I just can't wrap my head around why he would so willingly out himself.
Yeah, that's a weird one. And I would like to say, so we've been trying to think of ways to get our listeners a little more involved.
Yeah, definitely.
I would love to see pictures from people that they draw of Fritz and what he looks like with the eye patch and the beret. I want to see their take on on what Fritzy boy looks like, because he's quite the character.
Do you want them to draw Fritz before they look at the Instagram post and see him?
Mm.
Or after?
If you've already seen it, then, you know, go for it. If you haven't, I think I would love a before and after. So when he's, okay. let's get a John Johnson picture, and then let's get a Fritz picture.
Okay.
The hearse in the background's optional. I'll leave that up to you.
I think that's a great idea.
And no male nudity from the bottom down, from the midsection down.
Yeah, that's the line. That's Evan's line. He will cancel any project he's working on if there's lower half male nudity.
And luckily, your webcam is from like the shoulders up. So
yeah, you don't want me to tilt it down.
Yeah, that'd be bad.
All right. You can follow us at Oddity Archive Podcast on Instagram. That's the easiest way to connect us, get updates on the show. You can also email us if that's your thing at oddityarchivepodcast@gmail.com. Reach out to us. Let us know what you want to hear. Let us know what you think about old Fritzy boy.
Send us your pics.
Yeah. And we'd love to hear your stories. If you have a story that's happened to you or a loved one or a friend or something, we love to hear those stories. We're thinking ahead to future episodes, maybe using listener stories for an episode or two in the future. So if you got something like that, we'd love to hear it.
So yeah, as always, we'll catch you on the next one.
Bye-bye.
Oh, wait. There you go. Just needed a button.
I am David Stuhldreher, creator and host. The show is edited by my co-host, Evan Miller. All original music created by Sean Bullock. You can follow him at Sean Bullock Video on Instagram. All original artwork done by Tanis. Follow her at Tanis Tattoos on Instagram as well. Thank you for listening.